everybody, and welcome to the Sportfolio Podcast. I'm your host, Mario Margola. This is episode 2 of the show, and it's being recorded right at the end of week 5 of the 2018 NFL season. And what a week it was. 10-3-1 against the spread, 5-1 in confidence picks against the spread. And most importantly for me, it came right after I released a new type of content in episode 1, in the first part of this podcast. And that's something that always comes with a little bit of concern, because it was a slightly different approach to my routine. It was truthfully nothing more than me just recording what I would normally do otherwise. But it was nice to see that those turned into wins. It could have easily been something where the first week of the show was average, and I would have been perfectly fine with that. And instead, it actually ended up being outstanding. So far, the best week I've had. And I mention that because one of the struggles I always run into is that the success of my picks often determines how much people read what I write, or in this case, I'm going to assume how much people listen to what I say. However, what I'm trying to make this podcast about is less about the week-by-week picks. Of course, I will look back to the last week of action to try to draw some conclusions, but I want it to be more about the mindset that goes into picking these games, because the mindset is consistent. The picks won't always be, and we want them to be, but we cannot always predict exactly how it's going to go. But the mindset is consistent week to week. And last week, we specifically talked about the Pittsburgh Steelers, not because of the team, the Pittsburgh Steelers, but because of where they fit into the week, into the mentality, and into the perception. They were the final game of week 4. It was a division game against the Ravens, and they were the easy game to talk about, to conclude something from when you're moving to the following week. And that's something that I always look at. I always look at what is the easy game to put down on paper and say, that's the one. That's the one that's going to define this team. And sure enough, the Steelers, I essentially live picked that game without knowing anything, without knowing the spread, without knowing the matchup. And that ended up being a confidence pick for me that honestly developed on the fly. By the time I sat down to write about the game, I wanted to just write, you know, go listen to the podcast. Go check out episode 1, and that's why I'm picking the Steelers. So not only was it a free pick that I was very happy to give out, but it was also one that developed organically. And, I mean, you're going to have to believe me. It was a game I wasn't even actually looking at until I started talking about it and going down that road, and I felt it was worth it to complete to kind of close the loop and see where they stood for the following week. And it ended up being a pick that not only did I give out, but won, and it won big. They won 34-17, if I'm remembering. So it was a pretty big win, pretty big takeaway. And I mention that because let's say they lost. Let's say the Steelers lost. Or they didn't cover the spread, whatever. The really easy conclusion to draw after listening to me wax poetic about them is that, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And you know what? That might be true in other areas. But when it comes to the approach to a game, that was the right way to look at it. Anything could happen. But if we are putting the odds in our favor, which is all we can do, we take away what was essentially the most popular game perception, and we find out if it's true or not. And I mention that because that's exactly where I want to start with this week, and it's quite frankly where I probably will always start. But before I do, I want to mention, I want to be very careful. I do not want this podcast to be week by week and only be confined to what happened in the prior week and what could happen in the following week. I know that's how it's going to be, that's how it will be portrayed. I know when you read the description, you will to have that takeaway that, all right, week 4 NFL picks or week 4 recap means that I'm only going to be able to use this for week 5. Yeah, I mean, in essence, that's one of the picks that I probably will give out every week will probably only be for week 5. But I want to move away from that. I want it to be more general terms about what is the setup we like. And honestly, and this is a something that needs to be said and needs to be digested. We don't pick the teams necessarily. We pick the matchup that gives the best setup for the numbers. We're essentially picking if you took away the team names and just gave the spreads and a few key statistics, that's what you're picking. You're picking numbers. I mean, the one number you can't exactly quantify is perception, which is ironically the most important thing when it comes to picking the spread. But that's actually the point. What makes this game so beautiful is that the perception can't be put into a number, but the expectation of what the perception drove can. That is picking games against the spread. So to go one more time back to the Steelers, the perception was that they were done. The number, which actually ended up being, I think they were favored by 3 by the time the game started. So let's say 3. The number 3 in Pittsburgh's favor, gave the expectation that Pittsburgh would win, which did not jive with the perception. So then the question is, who's right? And if we weren't able to properly assess the perception, we wouldn't be able to properly assess the number afterwards. That's why I went in that order. That's why I started with what was the game we looked at and felt that this was not real, or this is too good to be true, too easy, right? It's too easy to sell the Steelers. And then we decided that's not real. And then we said, what's the number for that game? Oh, they're favored? They're favored by a couple points too? Great. Now we know that what we saw was not real. That works. So when we're looking at these games, it's not necessarily the team playing, you know, a rival or playing on the road, which is another thing that eventually I'm sure I will talk about. It is very strictly, what's the number? What's the perception? And there's one set of matchups that drives perception way out of whack more than anything else. It happened with the Steelers and Ravens. It happened in week 4 that led into one of my favorite picks of week 5. And it happened, I started taking notes multiple times in week 5 so we could look forward. That is division games. I love division games, love them. Because you have familiarity, which is a word I very rarely pronounce correctly, so let's pretend that was right. And you have 6 games between these teams every year. Now, it's 2 games for each division rival against each other, 6 in total, which is, you know, 6 out of 16 games. That's, you know, 3/8 of the season. You're playing a division team. You're playing a division game. So you have many opportunities for this particular, you know, perception driver, but it's not so much what happens in those games. And that's one side of it. I actually love division games because you can make the argument that the underdog usually has a nice cushion in a division game. Look back to any game you've ever seen where a significantly better team lost or was held to a much closer game against a significantly worse team. And I would say if you look at all the games where that happens, maybe 70% of them are division games. And I'm totally ballparking that number, but look back to any weekend, and we'll look at this weekend in particular, and you very clearly will have a bunch of division, whether they're outright upsets or upsets against the spread. The division underdog has a nice edge. So that's one side of it. But the real key that people miss, because people do understand division underdogs, like when the Jets play the Patriots. The Patriots are historically better than the Jets. Now, on any given year, that might change, but that's one rivalry where you could argue has been one-sided in terms of overall record for well more than a decade. But you look at the games, and you will have many Jets matchups where they actually beat the spread, and a few sprinkled in there where they win outright. And that's a perfect example of an underdog in a division game that plays up to its competition, its level of competition. But that's one side of it, right? The real thing that gets missed is what happens after that game. It's not about their letdown, which is possible. It's about what we, the world, the football fans, what we took away from that game. And my argument, and I make this every single week in my column, we can take nothing away from division games. Nothing. They are essentially one-game playoffs where at the conclusion of that game, you could wipe everything clean. The loser goes home. The winner moves on. Completely irrelevant how that plays out. Now, there are some game plans we might like to look at. I mean, if a you know, if a specific running back that no one had heard of before emerges and now is going to become the starter, then sure, that's maybe that's noteworthy. But one, I guess I said one more time, maybe now this is one more time, looking at the Ravens and Steelers, one of the reasons why I didn't want to bury the Steelers was not because it was, not just because it was a primetime game, not just because they looked so bad, but because they played so poorly against a division team, which means that nothing can be taken from that. You can't look at how they played against the Ravens and determine that's it. That is the defining moment of Pittsburgh. No. It's the opposite. You look at what they did against the Ravens and you say, all right, throw that out. Forget it. Baltimore, an underdog, came into Pittsburgh and just won because they were a division underdog who knows how to play the Steelers. You could play that game 10 times. You might get 4 wins for Pittsburgh, 4 wins for Baltimore, 2 ties, and completely different sets of circumstances throughout the game. Because it's a division rivalry. So you throw that out. Now, one of the most common things I heard going into week 5 was that the Jacksonville defense was going to be able to slow down the high-powered Kansas City offense because, and here's the key, because Denver's defense slowed down the Kansas City offense. Now, think about the two teams at play. Denver, a division underdog, was able to slow down Kansas City. Now, Denver didn't win, which I almost would have preferred them to, but Denver did not win, and still, the takeaway was, yeah, but the Chiefs had scored 30-plus points in every game. They didn't score 30 this game. That's the blueprint to beat Kansas City, is play defense like Denver played. And it's an easy connection to make. Who is the best defensive team heading into Week 5? Well, it's Jacksonville. So you had a very good defensive team in Denver slowing down an outstanding offense in Kansas City. And you take that 1 week forward and you say, okay, find me a team like that that's going to be able to slow them down, and that's the matchup. It's perfect. It was ideal that Jacksonville was going to play Kansas City after Denver played Kansas City. However, the argument was not that Jacksonville was always built to be able to slow down the Chiefs. It wasn't like, you know, 2 weeks ago we were pointing to Jacksonville as the team that's going to beat Kansas City. Understand that. This was not built up as the defense to stop the Chiefs. This was built as the defense that most resembled a team that slowed down the Chiefs. And that team that slowed down the Chiefs was a division game, a division team, which means, again, nothing. Absolutely nothing. Denver slowing down Kansas City meant nothing. You take that game, you package it, you throw it away. But that's not what happened. And because of that, the spread was painfully small. I mean, I shouldn't say painfully small because it was essentially 3 points, and I consider that a moderately sized spread. I mean, 3 points is the common spread. So it was the point is that it was smaller than it should have been. If Kansas City had obliterated Denver, well, the spread would have been higher. If Kansas City had played a defense other than a division team in week 4 and been slowed down, I would have bought into a little bit more. But it was so easy to take that game, that matchup, and apply it to the future, and that was the mistake that was made. Now, my mistake, my hesitation, was that I wasn't going to go in with the confidence pick, not because I didn't think Kansas City would win and cover the spread, but because there was an unknown with Jacksonville, because Kansas City's defense is very bad. So you could make the argument that Jacksonville was going to score 21 to 28 points, somewhere in that range. They were going to put together a good matchup. Now, if they put 28 points on the board and Kansas City scores 31, like I expected them to do well anyway, well, then they don't cover the spread. So Kansas City's defense was the unknown. That's the only reason why I didn't go with the confidence pick. However, 30 to 14 later, the Chiefs walk away as easy winners. Now, I will project ahead even further. That's it for the Chiefs. That's it. they're 5-0, and they just beat what everyone was expecting to be the best defense they'll play. The Chiefs will be most likely massive favorites going forward, depending on the matchup, and they will be incredibly easy to pick for the majority of people going forward. I am undecided how I will approach it. As of right now, I will be very, very cautious. I prefer them to have big spreads, because if it's a small spread, I'm going to be forced to think it's a trap. And if it's a trap, I'm going to be forced to pick against them. And quite frankly, I don't want to pick against them right now, which means I should. I would like to see big spreads so that I know. What that would tell me is that the people who are setting the spreads are not playing around anymore. They're not taking chances. They don't want to get burned by Kansas City. Now, they did not get burned in week 5 because enough interest was in Jacksonville's favor because of exactly what I said. But I'd like to see what they do going forward. If I see big spreads, that's some sort of protection. And that would most likely lead me to pick Kansas City. But more importantly, forget Kansas City for a minute. The focus is going to be on division teams and division games. And it's something I want. Like, I write this every single week. I even joke about how often I write it in the column by literally saying, how many times do I have to repeat this? Division games mean nothing in the long run. So it's something I'm sure I will say many times on here, but I will at least, for the sake of getting some value out of it, look to the games that we just saw being played within the division. And I marked down 5 of them from week 5. It was Packers and Lions, Ravens and Browns, Rams and Seahawks, Cardinals 49ers, Raiders and Chargers. Now, the one that popped out at me while reading that list was Rams at Seahawks. The Seahawks almost pulled off the outright upset at home against the Rams. They beat the spread, which the spread was honestly laughable. That was a confidence pick for me. 7 points, and I think it was 7.5. 7 to 7.5 points at home for the Seahawks in a division game. That's downright disrespectful to Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. I absolutely love Russell Wilson. That guy, every single season he's been in the NFL, has had a winning season. Not a non-losing season, not an 8-8 season and then a bunch of 9-7s. A winning season every year. If he's an underdog, and he's an underdog at home, and he's an underdog at home in a division game, I mean, I am running to make that pick. I don't know what matchup, especially in the division, would make me not take the Seahawks, as a home underdog in a division game. So, for me, Seattle playing well was not a surprise. Now, there's two sides of that game. Did the Rams play poorly? The Rams almost lost. Did the Rams play well? I don't know. I know that Seattle playing that well was, and I quote, because I believe this was said somewhere, shocking to people. Shocking. The Rams -7 was like, apparently, a pick that was a no-doubter. Where I'm sitting on the other side saying it's a no-doubter that Seattle's +7 at home. But, so be it. I'll be fair. The Rams had an outstanding offense heading into the game. They still put up 30 points. They still won. My question is, how does this make the Rams look now? Does this make them look a little more vulnerable because Seattle was able to go toe-to-toe with them? Or does the 5-0 record wipe that away? And my main goal in this is to ignore what happened in this game. Ignore it. Other than pointing out the fact that yet another team put up a lot of points against the Rams, I do think that's a valid point. But my goal here is to ignore what we can take away from the Rams, watch them over the next few days, and not draw any conclusions from how they played in Seattle. The other game that jumped out is Baltimore at Cleveland. Now, Cleveland is, if nothing else, a tough team. I believe they will be in every game this year, and but I'm far from the first person to say that. I'm probably the first person to be still down on them. Apparently, there was this meeting of the minds where everyone just decided this is the year Cleveland's going to be good. And I'm still not buying into that. I'm not buying into Baker Mayfield, which is a separate conversation, not to be derailed right now. And I'm not buying into the fact that Cleveland can just flip a switch and all of a sudden be competitive. But what we're seeing is Cleveland is, ready, competitive in division games. They tied the Steelers on opening day, and they just beat the Ravens in a sloppy overtime game. They've gone to overtime in almost every game this year, and that I think is a good sign. Like, that's a sign that I think is not going to go away. I think the Browns will not be out of too many games. And actually, they've been competitive in all five games this year. But what I would like to see, and this is where I want to go with this one, I want to see what they do in non-division games going forward. After they beat the Jets, the Browns went to Oakland and were pretty flat in the beginning of the game. They had a pick six. They were down 7-0 right away. And then they played very well. They put it all together, jumped out to a big lead, and then couldn't close it. Ended up losing in overtime in a wild, somewhat miraculous turn of events, at least for those of us who picked Oakland, which I was one of. And then they came back and they played a probably even sloppier game against Baltimore. However, Baltimore, and this is the key, on the other side of the game, played very poorly. They played down to the Browns' level of competition. If you want to say the Browns are not that bad, fine. But they were the favorite who lost outright, Baltimore. So we have Cleveland playing competitive football in every game. However, clearly playing well, clearly stepping up against division teams. So I'm very curious about what happens when they play. I mean, they'll play non-conference games coming up. Very, very likely I will be selling them in games like that. And on the other side, I want to see Baltimore now. Baltimore, I believe, is going to suffer the same punishment that Pittsburgh suffered after week four. Baltimore is going, I'm telling you, we're going to hear, well, Baltimore's not that good. Baltimore is that good. Baltimore's a good team. But they beat a division team, lost to a division team. So where are they? And you could make the argument on both sides of it. You could say, well, Mario, they're not as good as what they looked like against the Steelers. Possibly. And Mario, they're not as bad as they looked against the Browns. Possibly. And you're honestly, as a collection, as a combination of those two, you're probably right. But the point is, we are a very reactionary group of people, these football fans of us, and we have a tendency to look at only the last one. So we have a tendency to only look at what they did against Pittsburgh and say, well, that's what they are. And then we'll have a tendency to now look at what they did against Cleveland and say, well, that's what they are. So while they are obviously somewhere in the middle, as most teams are when you look at any win and loss combination, we could say that they are probably least like the team we saw most recently. That's a mouthful. Let me repeat that better. They are least like the team we most recently saw. So they are least like their last game, is essentially where I'm going. When you have a, you know, back-to-back set of division games. But that can be true over the span of multiple games. The division game that happened last, if it's last week, is the one that is least representative of the team that we're talking about. So going forward, it is, or I should say going right into next week, it is likely that the Ravens will be oversold. Now, I like many of the games, I don't know who they're playing next week, so that could be completely different. But the main theme is something worth watching. Now, I promised that this wouldn't be just confined to the most recent week of action, and I got a better way to prove that point. If we look back to week four, now we know what happened in week five. So in week four, we had, as usual, a couple of division games, and a couple of them really jump out as moving the needle in the wrong direction. The Cardinals and Seahawks played in week four in Arizona, and Seattle won by a last-second field goal. So Seattle, a team that, you know, forget the fact that they played the Rams this week. Try to think back to where they were prior to this week. Seattle's a team that is usually expected to be good, has played poorly in the beginning of the year. It's clear that their offensive line has been a weakness. And they went into week four, 1-2. And they played, quite frankly, they played badly against Arizona in Arizona. And they won. They still were able to squeak out a win, in which was a trap of a spread, by the way. That spread was -3, so Seattle was walking into a trap. And they just squeezed by. Now, when I say that, I kind of subconsciously dropped in something important there. They were walking into a trap, which meant that this was a game that most people expected to go Seattle's way. They expected this to be a Seattle, an easy Seattle win, because that's the definition of a trap. So while it's easy to say that that game was 3-point favorite for Seattle and Seattle won by three, so you know, no harm, no foul, it's actually not true. There was a lot of harm, because that was what looked like easy money to people. Seattle minus three looked like an easy pick, which is why it was a trap. So yeah, the people didn't lose money on Seattle in that game, but they didn't win it either. And when you miss your opportunity to win, quote, an easy game, you know, there's not easy games in the NFL. So that's a loss, you know, not on the record, but that's a loss in the scrolling through, finding the games you like. So Seattle essentially, well, be fair, Seattle pushed, they tied against the spread in a, quote, easy game. And in the process, they won a game they should have won by a lot. They won that game by a little bit. So you walk away from Seattle, and that very, very clearly contributed to a big spread in their next game against the Rams. But if you're paying attention, you realize that Seattle played that 3-point game in a division game, which meant falling susceptible to a trap means nothing. It meant nothing that they almost lost to Arizona. It's easy to almost lose to Arizona when it's a division game. You want another one? I got another one. This one's actually even better. New England and Miami. New England obliterated Miami in week four. Tore them apart. It was not even close. Quite frankly, it was never close. But two things. One, that was not exactly a surprising outcome. I might have even actually talked about this. I know I touched upon it a little bit in episode one, but it's gonna drive home the point again. Not exactly a surprising outcome. But two, and more importantly, it was a division game. So, and actually, it was a division game with a lot of importance. It was a division game where if New England lost, they would have fallen three games behind the Dolphins in the AFC East. So that had not just familiarity, if that was right, that's twice this episode. I don't want to say it again, so not just that word, but high stakes. So New England won, and New England won with high stakes and with a the risk of falling susceptible to, not a trap, because it wouldn't be a trap in that sense. It was a large spread. But New England avoided a common pitfall of getting caught against a team in a division who was going to play up to to the Patriots level. So what happens next? Miami goes to Cincinnati. This is the perfect game to look at, because it's going to have follow through effects where we're almost definitely going to use one of two teams in the next week based on what happened here. But Miami goes to Cincinnati and goes there as pretty heavy underdogs, inexplicably heavy underdogs. Miami went to Cincinnati as at 1.6.5 to 7-point underdogs. Now I like Cincinnati, and I've been buying into Cincinnati a lot this year, but this was not the time to do it, and it was not the time to do it against the Dolphins team, where if you look at the entirety of their season, you have a 3-0 stretch of games where they looked really good, and then you have one game where they look terrible. Now you could always argue that if you take any one game out of a 4-game set, you could throw it out, but we'll pretend that we don't know which game to throw out. Now you add in the fact that the one terrible game was against a division favorite on the road. They're playing in New England. Now you could really, really easily dismiss that game. So if you throw that game out, which is what you should do because it's a division game, you say, all right, well, then they're 3-0 with three good games. Or they're 0-1 with a horrible game. And clearly, based on what I'm saying, that's not true. That's not representative of what they really are. So we move forward, and we pick the Dolphins against the Bengals. And we pick the Dolphins as a confidence pick, actually. So I had mentioned to this point, again, with one more game to go, I'm 5-1 in confidence picks this week. The one was the Dolphins. It was a loss. However, and this is one thing I'm afraid of when I'm doing this podcast, I do not want to make excuses for losses. That's not what this is. It's if anything, it's actually a point that needs to be heard because it creates more value in the future. That is, Miami might have lost and lost against the spread but they didn't. Miami led 17-0 at one point. They had the ball with the lead late in the game. They gave up two defensive touchdowns to not only lose, but lose against the spread. They lost by 10, 27-17. Two defensive touchdowns. Now, that's not like that happens. And yeah, in the moment, it's annoying and it's upsetting and it's what we call a bad beat. But that happens all the time. I mean, if you've read my articles over the past couple of years, you have unfortunately been on the wrong side of bad beats many more times than we've been on the good side of what I guess we'll call good beats. It happens. And it honestly, it happens a lot of times in these games where it's maybe not a trap. This one wasn't a trap, but it was a confidence pick. It was one where the perception should not have gone a certain way, and then the ball shouldn't have gone a certain way, and both of those things happened. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a loss. But it's a loss where we are definitely going to walk away and say, hey, 27-17, I knew Miami wasn't that good. That is what we're going to hear this week. They went from 3-0 to 3-2, and you're going to hear that Miami isn't very good. And maybe they're not very good, but 3-2 is a good team, and it's a good representation of what they are. They are better than average, and they're being treated like they are below average. And when they lose against the spread, they're being treated like they are way below average. But the same thing is happening on the opposite side of the game with Cincinnati. Cincinnati now is being treated like they are on the good side of everything. Now, Cincinnati has been a wild team for people. I wrote this in my column. The spread has always been one game behind Cincinnati, and thankfully, we have always been one game ahead of them. Now, this game is going to go down as a loss. But again, it really wasn't. We were ahead of Cincinnati. We picked a team who led 17-0 against a favorite of 6 points. 6.5 points. I will take that every single time. That means that we have a 23-point cushion in our pick. 23. And we lost. Again, it's annoying, but it happens. The point is, we had the right read on Cincinnati again. But we are not alone in the world, and Cincinnati will end up now winning another game against the spread. And this is the key for this one. This is the second time that Cincinnati scored a late, relatively meaningless touchdown on defense that pushed them over their spread. So they have two wins against the spread that came from nothing more than defensive touchdowns that did not necessarily have an impact on the game. Now, yeah, of course, every point counts and every point's nice, but what I'm getting at is that they did not need those points to win. They just used those points to help close it off and seal off the game. Two of them already through 5 weeks, which obviously means that if we're looking ahead, we're saying that those two wins and that against the spread record is somewhat flawed. So let's see if I'm right on that. Let's see if I'm alone on that. Whether it's for Cincinnati gaining too much or Miami losing too much, I think both is going to happen. Let's see where those two teams stand. And like I said, I did this last week, and I enjoyed the fact that I did not know the game, the matchup, the spread. So I don't know who Cincinnati's playing this week. I don't know who Miami's playing this week. They could both be on byes for all I know. But I'm curious. I'm curious to see if there was any... I'm curious to see if Miami is going to continue to be oversold, and if Cincinnati is going to continue to be overbought. And what I'd like to see is Cincinnati with a spread of them being favored by more than 3. I don't know, again, don't know who they're playing. And at the same time, I'd like to see Miami being underdog again by 6 or so. So let's see, I'm scrolling through, and Miami, oh, this is perfect. Boy, it's amazing how this keeps happening. Miami's playing Chicago. And last week, I actually pointed out Chicago being a team that we need to be ready to sell a little bit, meaning we need to be a little down on Chicago against the spread, because it's going to be a little too easy to be up on Chicago based on how they played against Tampa Bay in their last game. So pretty amazing and pretty fitting, actually, that Chicago's playing Miami. It's a 3-point spread right now. So this is a little bit it's a little bit opposite of what I expected to see, but it does kind of drive home the point a little bit. I wanted to see Miami being a really big underdog. However, they're home, and they're right now 3-point underdogs. At least that's what I'm seeing as of, you know, as of Monday, just scrolling through. And now my reaction is that's probably going to be a trap. I expected Miami to be a big underdog because I thought they would be they would suffer a premium from their loss, a loss premium, I guess we'll say. But it's actually more telling that against what's going to be a very, very highly backed team in Chicago, that they're only getting 3 points right now. I'm not sure if that spread's going to move, and I'm curious if it does. If it doesn't move, and here's a look-ahead pick, I guess we'll say. If the spread doesn't move from three, look at Miami. That's probably Miami's probably the right pick there, because that means that it's set up to be a trap. I'm telling you right now, most people are going to pick the Bears. That is a Bears pick. That's a Bears trap totally. But if the spread moves, then it might be some protection just in case the Bears do win and cover. So if it doesn't move off three, you have some good value there. Now let's keep going. Cincinnati. Cincinnati's playing at home against Pittsburgh. I didn't see the spread just this second. So that's a tough one because Pittsburgh did just win big against Atlanta. This is probably going to be also a 3-point spread for Cincinnati. 2.5. There it is. 2.5. So nothing to be gained by this. Unfortunately, I wanted to see massive overreaction. We didn't get it. That's fine. And if anything, now you could kind of trust that when I look at these spreads kind of live as I'm recording, I guess it would be called, you could trust that I'm doing it without prior knowledge of what to expect. Sure, I tried to guess a little bit. I tried to guess Cincinnati spread there. But that doesn't mean there's no value to be had. Right now, it means I'm not going to make a conclusion on Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. I'll put that game off to the side. Just know that Cincinnati, prior to this game, has won two games against the spread that were extended leads at the end, where both the times they were not covering. Put them away for right now. But Miami, I think, is a really good value, actually, based on what happens over the next day or two. Miami should not be a 3-point underdog based on perception alone. You look at what Chicago did 2 weeks ago now, and it was exactly what I said was going to happen, or exactly what I said we need to look at happening, is that Chicago is going to be a very popular team because you're going to say, where were they last week? Oh, on a bye? Okay. That means they're rested. Where were they the week before? Oh, they obliterated Tampa Bay? Great. They're a good team. So they were going to be favored in almost any game against almost any team in week 6. But now you have them favored by a small number against a Dolphins team who's lost 2 in a row, failed to cover 2 in a row, and technically lost both games by double digits. So they looked bad in both games. Really what happened was they lost the division game, so we take nothing from that. Means nothing. Put that one aside. And they lost the game by 10, where they led by 17 and were losing by 3 before an unfortunate defensive or an unfortunate turnover turned into a touchdown and turned into a defensive touchdown. Got all that? Miami was suffering from a loss to New England that shouldn't have caused them to suffer and is not suffering enough from a loss to Cincinnati because when people are making these odds, when people are making these spreads, they know that they don't need to give a lot of points to Miami in order for people, or sorry, they don't need to have Chicago give too many points for them to still be a highly picked and still probably fail. So right now, if you're looking for an edge, Miami's a big edge right now. In fact, Miami is almost definitely, I've talked myself into it over the last 5 minutes, they're almost definitely going to be a pick of mine. Whether they become a confidence pick, I don't know. But I expected to see a different spread, got a spread that actually makes me feel that this game falls into a different category. It moves from a overreaction spread to a trap. And either one of those I like. Pittsburgh was an overreaction spread. Miami's now a trap. And by Miami, I mean Miami's opponent is a trap. Miami's the pick I like. So expect me to stick with Miami unless the spread starts to move over the next 2 days while I'm writing my article, at which point I'll have to revise my stance. But if we want value, you look at we're going to keep looking at division games and highly publicized games. And I wanted to be very clear that for this week's episode, division games are the focus because it's something I write about every single week. It's something I touch upon every week. And it's something that you can use forever going forward. And you don't need to, like, you don't need to listen to this podcast before week six. Listen to this podcast whenever and figure out how you can apply it to a division game in which one team looked exceptionally bad or one team looked exceptionally good. Now, ironically, Miami is not coming off a division game. It's coming off of a division game 2 weeks ago. But the point still remains, right? They actually, here's the way you look at it. They haven't cashed in on what happened 2 weeks ago yet. They were supposed to cash in last week, and they did and then didn't. They dropped the ball at the very end. So they still are owed, or they still owe us, a rebound from that division loss against the spread, and that's most likely coming now. So at the same token, feel free to, and I obviously I'd want everyone to listen to as many episodes as possible, but if you didn't listen to episode one because you thought it doesn't apply, since it only, you know, it seems like it'll only be focused on what's happening in week four leading to week five, please go back and listen to it. There's something worth hearing my walkthrough of that Pittsburgh game where maybe you'll gain some insight. And quite frankly, my expectation is that it'll help make you better. It'll help make you better at picking games against the spread. I don't want you to look at a game that just happened. Way too many times I hear, well, they look bad in that game. Yeah, they look bad in that game. All right. My question to you is, was that them for real? Or was that a circumstance that doesn't actually portray what that team really is? So I urge you, if you want to get better at this, go back, listen to episode one. Forget the fact that you can't actually use those picks, although you will hear me talk about Chicago as a team we're going to look to sell, and here we are probably selling them. But go back, listen to it, and see if you could find something that helps you become better at picking these games. In the meantime, if you like just sticking with things chronologically and saying, well, that one passed, then so be it. Then take what I did here, take what I looked at here with division games, try to make sure we're always looking back at those games and say, all right, was that a case of a better team getting caught by a division underdog who was rising up to the occasion? Probably yes. Or is that really what we're going to see going forward? Most of the time, it's the former. It's a division game being closer and not actually representing what these two teams really are. Now I'm going to give you a little insight, a little actually behind the scenes. I had planned to end the episode right here. And in fact, I did end the episode right here. I saved it, closed it, started editing a little bit. And then the Monday Night Football game began, so I started watching. And an opinion emerged. Something I did not think was going to happen happened that made me want to jump back in and add a few more minutes. And like I said originally, I don't want any episode to be too heavy on any one particular game that could only be used for the near future. And that might be the case here, so I will not spend too much time on it. But last night, to me, I'm now recording this on Tuesday, so the second portion of this podcast is technically a second day from the first. So in the Monday Night Football game, Drew Brees broke the record for passing yards in a career and also came within one of reaching 500 career passing touchdowns. Awesome night. I love the guy. It's hard not to like him. Very easy to root for. That's one story. Put that off to the side. The other story is what happened on the other side of the game, and that's Alex Smith. And I really try hard not to be too definitive from any one game, good or bad. But that doesn't mean that other people aren't making decisions and making opinions or shifting opinions, rather, based on what they saw or what they see in a game unfolding. And I find it quite interesting that on one side you had Drew Brees dominating, but nobody's surprised by that. Nobody, you know, Washington's defense was expected to be better than it was going into that game. So you could say that was a surprise. But Drew Brees on any given night, if he goes out there and throws 400 yards and multiple touchdowns, you really don't bat an eye. But forget the numbers. Did Alex Smith look bad, terrible, or awful? Because I can tell you right now, he did not look good. And one of the main points I made in week four was, if you watch what happens on a nationally televised game because it's nationally televised, like literally because the nation is watching, which means that there are more eyeballs on it, more people are not going to miss what happened. If you pay attention to what happens there, you could very much find an overreaction going into the following week. So our overreaction directly from primetime of week five is that Alex Smith is awful. He is just not capable right now of playing quarterback, which is, of course, not true. He's proven it's not true. We're basing this opinion on one game, which is only the last game he played before having a big performance against Green Bay. So it's not like this is multiple games removed. What it is, however, is multiple weeks removed. So Alex Smith had a big win against Green Bay. Then they went on a bye. Then the Sunday games happened. Then all of Monday daytime happened. And then Monday Night Football happened. So the most recent opinion of Alex Smith was driven not by multiple games, but by one game that was spaced out chronologically over a long stretch of time. And it was a really bad game. But it was likely an uncharacteristically bad game, which means, of course, that there's going to be an overreaction against Alex Smith. And that means there will be a buying opportunity for Alex Smith for us. So I don't know if I will specifically pick Washington and Alex Smith in their next game. But I can tell you right now, I'm paying attention to it. And I'd be ready to... I know they're playing Carolina, or at least I think they're playing Carolina if I remember what I'd seen or thought I'd seen. I don't know what the spread is. I don't remember what the spread is. I would assume that Carolina is favored. However, Carolina did just barely eke out a win against the Giants. Now, they did have firm control of that game for quite a while and actually kind of let the Giants come back in only to win by a miracle. So Carolina is somewhat of a shaky ground right now in terms of how I believe we should view them. But I would assume going into this that Carolina is favored against Washington. And I don't know if I'm going to stick with Washington, but I can tell you if I were to pick Carolina, which I don't think I will, but if I were, it would be at a very, very careful approach. They wouldn't be a confidence pick. They would be probably on the smaller end of any spectrum I would say is worth the risk. But I don't know. I don't know if that's... I don't know what the spread is. I guess I can look at the spread. I guess I formed my own little kind of habit of this on the fly. So let's see. Carolina, they are at Washington. And Washington right now, if I'm reading this right, and actually I don't think I'm reading this right, but they opened as... Oh, no. Okay. They opened as one-point favorites. And actually it said that they're up to 1.5-point favorites. So actually that's kind of a interesting little move, because I would have expected Carolina to be favored based on the perception of both teams and games coming out of Carolina on Sunday, not really looking impressive, but still winning, and Washington looking just atrocious, quite frankly, or at least Washington's offense. So actually, the spread did move up from 1 to 1.5 from what I just saw. However, I would be curious to see if that gets moved down, if people start loading up on Carolina and moving that. As of right now, with it already leaning in Washington's favor, I'm probably going to personally stick with Washington, but I haven't looked into it any more than just those numbers. My main point here is that performance on Monday Night Football was eye-opening in a negative way, and anything that opens more eyes, when there's already more eyes on it naturally because of the primetime nature of it, is something that I think we need to look at as being the outlier of whatever it is. Now, it's not necessarily the only bad game Alex Smith has had. He played poorly in week two against the Colts. Actually, statistically, he didn't. He put up almost 300 yards, but still, the team scored, if I remember correctly, 9 points. So it's not the only bad game he's had. You could make the argument half of his four games have been bad. At least the offense has been bad in half of those four games compared to what they should have been. So if we take that and look at the most recent one, which again was spaced out from the other ones, you get the opportunity most likely to buy back in. I'm interested to see what happens with that spread, But if you're on the fence, if you're torn, I would probably lean towards Washington. That's currently in the, you know, brief few minutes I've put the thought into it. That's where I would be leaning towards with Washington also. So I jump back in to add, just to add this little tidbit, because I did feel it was important, since you can't watch that game on Monday night and not think, man, this guy's playing poorly. Man, this guy's bad. And whenever you make a definitive statement, it's probably based on reaction and not actual analysis. So I will leave it at that. I will now move back into how I wanted to end this podcast and wrap up episode 2. So good luck this week. By now, this podcast should be on iTunes. So if you listen on iTunes, please give it a rating. Hopefully a good rating. If you want to reach out to me, my best spot is on Twitter, at Mario Mergola. Give me a follow there, even if you don't want to talk. That's obviously where I'll be posting all these podcasts going forward. And of course, if you want to read my columns, it's at sportfolio.com, S-P-O-R-F-O-L-I-O. And I'll add in the same thing I said last week. If you want to sign up to get all the picks, and right now, quite frankly, they have been... I'm hesitant to get too excited about how good they've been, because there will, of course, be a little bit of a slowdown in the future. So I actually don't blame you if you want to approach it carefully. But with all that being said, the best savings are always on the yearly package. So if you use the promo code podcast on any package, I'll take 10% off the first payment, which would, again, be the most savings on the yearly one. But I understand if you want to approach it carefully. We are 16-4 over the last 3 weeks in confidence picks. And I don't know, I didn't do the math on the overall, but I think we were 8 or 9 games over 500 on all our picks going into this week. And right now we're 10-3-1, so we're another 7 over 500. So it has been quite a stretch. And like I said, you get a nice discount, 10%, if you use podcast. Otherwise, I will continue to try to give away a free pick or two in these podcasts going forward. So if you like it, subscribe once it's on iTunes. Feel free to share it with anyone who you think might like it. And thank you, as always, for listening.